What is going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome back to another edition of the Jays for Days podcast. I'm Josh. He's Josh. We're talking basketball. We've got Jays. We've gone for days. Josh, how
are
you doing?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm good. You know, it's about to be finals week around here, but we're going to take a break and we're going to talk about basketball for a little while.
Then we'll finish the semester strong.
But yeah, we're going to talk some basketball today. I got five takeaways from the NBA and college basketball. Figured five takeaways from both might be a little extensive, so we decided to just go with five between the two. But per usual, we're going to start with winners and losers, teams that have put themselves in really good positions this week, teams who have failed to perform the way that they needed to. Josh, who's your winner?
My winner is Arizona State. I'm not really sure how you could say anybody else considering the week that they had. They beat St. John's and then went to Fog Allen Fieldhouse and beat Kansas.
I'm sorry, you said someone went to Fog Allen Fieldhouse and beat Kansas?
Yeah, that actually
happened.
That's
impressive. That's impressive.
They're 9-0. They won both those games by double digits. Mm-hmm. They also have wins over Kansas State and Xavier. When the new rankings come out, they're going to be a top five team. I don't see how they're not going to be, considering all of the chaos that happened around them.
Yep.
Nobody expected them to do anything.
Yeah, 100%.
You got to give them props.
Yep.
Bobby Hurley is doing a fantastic job. Their guards and Shannon Evans and Trey Holder can really, really score.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I can't get by this team yet. But they're making it a lot harder for me to continue to say that.
Right.
Because they're passing every test.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wouldn't have thought any less of them if they would have lost to Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
But they went in there and won by 10 points. I have to give them props. This is a phenomenal basketball team right now.
Yeah, for sure. And I hate to be boring, but, I mean, like you said, you can't really give it to anybody else. That was my winner as well. Arizona State, staying true to what winners and losers are trying to be. You know, teams that did what they put themselves in really good positions and – yeah, it's hard to argue anybody has a better resume than them at this point.
Beating teams, especially because they're still undefeated,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, for sure. You know, everyone's got these losses this year so far, and, you know, we'll talk, and, you know, don't talk too much about that quite yet. But this year, especially, like, they've got the wins, but they also don't have the bad losses, which is something that you can't say for a whole lot of teams so far this year. But yeah, Arizona State was who I went with. I don't really think there's any other team that deserved it anymore this week. On the same page there. Arizona State takes the winners across the board here at the Jays for Days podcast.
That's right.
Who's your loser?
My loser's Kansas. I thought about Florida, but that win against Cincinnati was huge.
Mm-hmm.
They lost two games, but they got that win. Cincinnati is a good basketball team. That's going to look really good when you're evaluating resumes in March. And, look, Florida State's still undefeated. They had a bad game. But I'm just not too concerned about Florida.
Mm-hmm.
We talked before about how this is going to happen sometimes because they're so reliant on their guards to shoot the ball well.
Yeah.
I expected a much better response from Kansas after that Washington loss.
Yeah.
Kansas and Villanova have made a living the past decade or so on being able to not compound their bad performances and go on losing streaks, especially in conference play.
Yeah.
You don't win conferences that are as good as the Big 12 and Big East year in and year out with losing streaks.
Right.
They have one bad game, it happens, nobody's perfect, and then they find a way to rebound and play well the next game.
Right. Right.
They never snowball their issues.
Right.
Which is why you see them always end with, you know, two conference losses.
Right.
One in the middle somewhere and one at the end.
Right.
Like, they've been really good about not building off of failure, and they just came out and offered very little resistance. Look, Arizona State can really score. We just talked about their guards, but I Bill Self just ripped into his team after the game, and I feel like that was kind of how I felt, too. It just seems like they're lacking the intangibles that guys like Landon Lucas and Frank Mason brought.
Right.
This just doesn't look like a Kansas team to me yet.
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, they've got some guys they're trying to get eligible for second semester, and maybe it looks different later.
Mm-hmm.
But that was my losers. Just I expected more.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're going to be fine. I was just very disappointed in what Kansas did this week.
You know, we're really vanilla here at the JS Ferris podcast this week because I wrote two losers down, and you mentioned both of them. So my losers were also Kansas and Florida. You know, the Cincy win helps, but you still lost. You know, the Loyola loss is the really bad loss. Florida State's still a, you know, an ACC team, Power 5 team, but it's still not a game that you should lose. And the fact that they were both at home is just bad. You know, you take away that Cincy win, and they have, you know, they have one good win against Gonzaga on neutral court, and losses to Florida State and Loyola. Now, I felt stronger about this before they beat Cincinnati, but that's just bad. Like, you can't lose those games to teams like Florida State and Loyola. You should be competing, you know, you should be beating Loyola for sure on the road, and you should be challenging Florida State on the road as well, and to lose to them at home. And Florida State really just, you know, they were in control of the game the entire time. Kansas on the other side, Kansas sort of in the same boat. I was shocked initially because I didn't realize that the Washington game wasn't at Fog Allen. So I understood it a little more, still not a game you should lose. But then when you lose for a second time in a row, and this time in Allen Fieldhouse, there's something needs to change because, as far as I'm concerned, Kansas should never, ever lose in Fog Allen Fieldhouse.
Yeah, it was just strange. And, you know, the Washington game was in Kansas City, which is essentially a home game.
Right, right.
You can forgive a bad performance. Yeah, it was just, I thought that they had more tenacity. I thought that they'd be more resilient, and they just weren't. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, there's still a long way to go, and they can fix some things. But I was, just very disappointed. It's not Kansas.
No, not Kansas at all. Our apologies for being very, very vanilla this week with our winners and losers. And, you know, you probably could have picked our winners and losers for us, and because they were just pretty obvious this week, which teams were not performing to the level that they needed to. But those are winners and losers this week. We'll do it again next week or the next time we have a podcast, per usual. Talk about those teams that just didn't perform or that performed admirably this year. I mean, over the week. But now we're going to hop into the meat of the podcast. We're going to talk five takeaways from the NBA and college basketball this season. Just some things we've sort of picked up on. Some things that we're noticing, things we're looking for. So how do you want to do this? How many MBAs do you have and how many colleges do you have?
Three college, two MBA.
Okay, so I think we're in the same boat there in terms of our how they're broken up. Yeah, so...
You want to start with the NBA we just talk college?
Yeah, let's do it. We'll start with the NBA. We'll run through our two NBA takeaways, and then we'll move back to college basketball. I made you go first for winners and losers, so I'll take my first takeaway from the NBA. And my first takeaway from the NBA is the Houston Rockets. There are a lot of experiments going on in the NBA this year with just lots of superstars on lots of teams. Specifically talking the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Houston Rockets. This has worked. Chris Paul, you know, he was hurt for the majority of the has been hurt for a lot of the season thus far. But since he's come back, the Rockets are 9-0. James Harden is still doing lots of James Harden things. Last night they combined for like 14 assists and 76 points or something. I didn't expect the Rockets, this experiment with Chris Paul and James Harden to work as well as it seems to have through these nine games. I didn't expect them to be, I thought they would figure it out, but I didn't expect them to be 20-4 or whatever they are through 24 games. I've been impressed with, you know, a Rockets team that, you know, Chris Paul has always been, has been known for, you know, barking at, he's a guy who demands a lot defensively, and the Rockets are a team that still aren't very good
defensively. Doesn't do much defensively.
And so that just, I was just surprised with how well it's worked, how effective the two have been able to be. And how they seem to be playing both James Harden and Chris Paul seem to be playing to their fullest potential, even though I felt like they're the most dominant with the ball in their hands, and for that, and there's just not enough time in the game for in a game for both of them to get the touches that they would get if they weren't on the same team.
I feel like it's just too early to judge whether this is actually going to work. Clearly, it has so far. You're definitely right about that. I'm curious to see what happens in crunch time and in the playoffs.
Right.
But because you can put stuff aside for a short amount of time, but when it comes down to your season on the line and you're playing really good basketball teams night in and night out, I think that's different. Now, maybe this is something where this is what it's going to look like all year. I just am hesitant to say that this is working yet.
Fair enough, but this far in the season, we don't have the luxury of playoff basketball.
That's
games.
Very true. Right. So far, it's working perfectly. I guess I don't put that much value in what a team looks like in the regular season. Which kind of leads me to my first takeaway. When are we going to stop overreacting when LeBron's team doesn't play well at the beginning of the season? Every time it happens, it's this huge deal.
Right.
And it's just not. Are we really surprised that they won 13 games in a row?
Right.
And are now back at the top, near the top of the Eastern Conference, right where they should be?
Right.
I'm not surprised. I don't think you're surprised.
No.
So that goes back to what I was saying about the Rockets. I think we just, if this was 50 games into the season or something, that'd be a little bit different for me. Mm. I just think that we jump on things too early. And just let's not care about what LeBron does during the regular season.
Right.
LeBron is playing for the playoffs so that he can get more championships.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't matter. And plus, they're not even at full strength yet.
Right.
They don't have Isaiah Thomas.
Right. You know, I completely agree. One of my other takeaways was I just continue to – every year it happens, but this year I continue to – solidify my viewpoint that LeBron James should win the MVP every single year.
Absolutely, no question.
Because I mean, they didn't have a good start. They didn't. At one point, they lost four straight, including losses to the Nets and the Knicks. LeBron just sort of like, I feel like LeBron sat down after they lost to the Pacers and the Hawks in two out of three games against the Pacers and the Hawks, both at home, and they lost both. I feel like he sat down after that game and just decided that he wasn't going to lose anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, right after that they lose to the Rockets, but the Rockets are the hottest team in basketball right now other than the Cavs. But I just – LeBron should – like you said, they're still without Isaiah Thomas.
They were trying to fit all these new pieces together,
right,
which is harder to do when LeBron is on your team just because LeBron has a certain way he wants things done.
Right.
He's very easy to play with,
mm-hmm.
but you have to get used to being on LeBron's team.
Right, for sure. But yeah, you know, nobody in the NBA can just decide that he's not going to lose like LeBron can decide that
right.
he's not going to lose. The Warriors are getting there as a team, but LeBron, and you know, so he's in the Eastern Conference, he's playing bad teams, whatever you want to say. When LeBron decides in the regular season that he's not going to lose for a while, he doesn't lose, and he does it without fail, and he does it every single year.
He has been through this so many times. He knows what he has to do to be in a position to succeed come postseason play.
Right.
It's that simple. Let's stop making this the headline on SportsCenter every
right.
time they go on a losing streak.
Right.
It's going to save everybody a lot of time because they're going to fix it eventually.
Right.
My other takeaway, on a different note, is that Brad Stevens should never, ever, ever, ever be doubted again in terms of his ability to make whatever team he is coaching really, really good.
Right.
Okay, sure, you can say he has Kyrie and all of these players. They're a good team regardless of who their coach is.
Mm-hmm.
But my goodness, they're winning the Eastern Conference. They're 23-5. They have a 4-game lead. This is incredible.
Right.
And part of me really thought this was going to happen. I just didn't have the courage to actually say it because
right.
it seems so improbable.
Uh-huh.
It's remarkable what he's doing.
It really is. It really is ridiculous to if you really put it into perspective what if you sort of take a step back, because, you know, not only did do you not have Gordon Hayward? But you prepared for 2-3 months like you were going to have Gordon Hayward.
This is something you've been very harping on. That's very true. He had to adjust on the fly.
Right. Like, even more, you know, obviously not having Gordon Hayward on the floor is the biggest impact, but you had to completely rearrange your offense to make it work. And, you know, Kyrie's got a lot of freedom. Brad Stevens has done a phenomenal job with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, getting the absolute best out of them. I completely agree with you. The what he's been able to do, and that, you know, such a sticky situation he got put into when Gordon went down, and just about as flawlessly and gracefully as you possibly can, he's, you know, put a completely different offense together, and a Celtics team that looks a little different than you thought it would, and still they've got this 4-game lead in a LeBron James Eastern Conference.
It's incredible. I still am having a hard time comprehending the fact that I actually read an article calling for him to be fired.
Right.
If they lost to the Bulls last year.
Mm-hmm.
What are 30 other teams, save the San Antonio Spurs probably, would be knocking on Brad Stevens' door if he got fired. He is the second best coach in the NBA behind Greg Popovich, and it's not close.
And when Pop retires,
he will be the best.
He will be the best team, the best coach in the NBA. He's one of those coaches, you know, I've talked about this before, but in the NBA, like, there are a bunch of decent coaches, and then there are, like, those two or three just elite head coaches. Mm-hmm. Brad Stevens has, if anybody was doubting that he was part of that group, what he's done early in the season, it's you know, it's not debatable. He's at that top level of coaching in the NBA.
It's crazy.
It really is. I mean, it really, when you think about it, it really is. And, you know, to go on the streak that they do, you know, 23-5 is impressive. And, you know, if you're winning, you know, 4 out of every 5, 5 out of every 6, then... But to do it and to have the win streak that they pulled off, it really was incredible for sure. Any other glaring takeaways from the NBA season thus far?
Those were my two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought about talking a little bit more about the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Yeah.
But we spent so much time talking about them last week that I decided against it. The only thing I'll say about it is that they comparable to the Golden State Warriors, they have so much talent on the floor. But the Warriors, and they're averaging more assists than everybody, but they average 10 more assists than the Oklahoma City Thunder do a game. That's at least, at the very minimum, 20 points. You know, just assisted field goals are generally easier field goals to put in the basket, just in general. If plays are assisted, you're most of the time making the right pass, and it's an easier shot to make. But it's just this idea that when you're sharing the ball, the talent on the floor is just that much more amplified, which is something that the Warriors do better than anybody, which is why they're the best team in the NBA. But that's the only thing I felt like I couldn't not mention the Thunder talking about the NBA season thus far.
That's true. That's probably the other big storyline. Pretty much other than that, things have gone to form.
Right.
The teams that started hot have now gone back to their mediocre ways.
Right.
So, it's the same teams. The Rockets, the Cavs, the Thunder, the Warriors, the Spurs, the Raptors.
Right.
Celtics.
You know, not exactly a lot of shocking things.
Yeah.
The Pistons have come back to reality a little bit. Shout out to the Sixers for being around
hanging
500 right there right now, hanging in there. 500 is all you need in the Eastern Conference to get into the playoffs. But
tough stretch right now, but so far so good.
But they'll dig out of it.
Yeah.
I have no doubt. All right, so we'll switch gears a little bit, move to college basketball. Josh, what are you thinking when it comes to this, you know, slightly more interesting start to the college basketball season?
Yeah. My first takeaway, and I think my biggest takeaway, well, not my biggest, but my most significant, is that Trae Young is the most valuable player in college basketball.
Facts.
And very well might be the best freshman in college basketball.
Facts.
First of all, he's putting up ridiculous numbers. Facts. He leads the country in scoring at 28.8 points per game.
Oof.
Do you want to know where second place is? Like 3 20, full points
yeah,
behind him.
Yeah.
He's also third in the country at assists at 8.8.
Casually.
But more than that, he's one of those players that, despite how good he is at scoring, he makes his teammates better.
Mm-hmm.
Because he plays within the offense and encourages people to share the ball.
Yep.
He has that quality that not everybody has,
mm-hmm.
which is making his teammates better, which is something we've harped on about Russell Westbrook.
Yep.
And, of course, he's also making his team much better because
right.
he's a phenomenal basketball
right.
player.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. That's, you know, I did. This isn't one of my takeaways, but I just, you know, think like it, like for the first time in a little while, I think that the best players in college basketball are freshmen.
Yeah,
Marvin Bagley and Trae Young specifically, at least thus far into the season. DeAndre Ayton, you know, Alonzo Trier has been really good. But you know, your senior guards at Kansas have been maybe a little disappointing thus far this year.
Miles Bridges hasn't
been playing to the tip top of his potential. I mean, his team's
right.
going to be first in the country the next time the AP poll comes
yeah.
out. So he's doing what he needs to do. But just in terms of how, you know, there's no Buddy Hield this year.
Yep.
There's no Frank Mason III. But no one's playing better basketball than Trae Young. He's just, you know, Marvin Bagley's pretty close to as valuable as he is because
right.
the Duke might have 3 losses at this point if he's not on that team. But Oklahoma might be like 4 games under 500.
Yeah, exactly.
And Trae Young's not on that team. So I concede your point for sure.
Marvin Bagley might be, that's why I said he
right.
might be the best
right.
freshman. I think I'm
right.
still giving that to Marvin Bagley. But he's right there.
Yeah, oh, for
he
sure.
He is so much fun to watch.
Right, yeah. No, he is definitely a lot of fun to watch. My first takeaway from college basketball season thus far is that it is not a good year to be the second-ranked team in the country. The second-ranked team in the country at this point, after Kansas's loss, is 4-6. Arizona lost 3 times as the number 2 team in the country to SMU and NC State. Michigan State is the number 2 team in the country, lost to the number 1 team in the country, but
still lost.
Then Kansas lost twice.
Right.
So the number 2 team in the country has multiple game losing streaks. You've got a 3-game losing streak and a 2-game losing streak as the number 2 team in the country. And 3 of those 5 teams are NC State, SMU, and Washington. I don't know what
That's
it is
crazy.
With the number 2 team in the country this year. And just for a little bit of perspective, the number 2 team in the country last year, you know how many losses they had all of last year?
I'm going to say 5.
6. They went 33-6 as the number 2 team in the country last year. We're not even halfway through December. They're 4-6. They've got 6 losses. It's just a weird year to be the number 2 team in the country thus far. So, I mean, I'm not trying to be the number 2 team in the
yeah.
country right now.
And it's weird, too, because that number is inflated by the fact that you had 2 different teams have really, really, really bad single weeks as number
right.
2.
Mm-hmm.
They compounded the issue by
right.
losing multiple times before they got pulled from
right.
the spot,
right. right.
which isn't doing everybody else
right.
and Michigan State any favors because Michigan State lost a game to Duke.
Right.
That's crazy, though.
Yeah, but, you know, it's also, you know, that's only 3 teams. 3
right.
teams with 6 losses.
It's right. So number 2s are going to lose down the,
right.
you know, in
it
the
happens,
too.
But
right.
there's only been 3 teams that, and they, you know, when a number 2 team loses multiple times, you know, and they, you know, like you said, they happen to have, you know, lost right after they became the number 2 team in the country, so they're losing a bunch as the number 2 team in the country. But yeah, I thought that was interesting, and you know, if I, like I said, I'm not trying to be the number 2 team
yeah,
in the country right now.
For sure. My second takeaway, speaking of number 2 teams in the country in Arizona, is that the FBI scandal is having a much bigger impact than I thought it would
mm.
on these teams. We just talked about, and have been talking about, Arizona's struggles.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they've looked better before and after Atlantis,
mm-hmm. yep.
but really struggled in Atlantis. USC, who I was really high on, is 4-3.
Mm-hmm.
Just got beat by Trae Young.
Shout out.
Louisville is 6-2 and really hasn't had a statement win. And then, you know, you obviously also have Auburn and Oklahoma State, but I really didn't expect it to have such, And maybe this is just a weird coincidence, but I find that hard to believe.
Right.
With a USC team that was so good last year and a coach like Sean Miller in Arizona's program, I didn't see this coming at all.
Right, yeah.
And so I think that it's weighing on them, which makes sense. I think it was more of I just didn't appreciate the significance and the emotional toll it would take.
Right.
But I, yeah, no, I just...
I think
looking into the future, I wouldn't have seen this.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I would agree with you. We talked about this a little bit last week, a couple weeks ago, talking about Arizona, just this idea that these are like people.
Right,
behind,
exactly.
Behind the uniforms that you know, have to go out onto the floor and... You know, it might you know, take a backseat in the middle of games, but it's still there. You know, I bet they think about it when they wake up a lot, you know, especially, you know, the coaches and talked about, you know, like if these coaches have done anything wrong and these assistant coaches are, you know, not trying to get obstruction of justice charges.
Right.
And so they're cooperating with the FBI. If you've done something wrong, then that's gonna take a toll on you and, you know, when you're trying to focus up and win basketball games.
There's just a lot of unknowns.
A lot of unknowns. What's going to happen today? Just lots of things to think about. But yeah, I think you're right. I think there's that FBI just takes a lot. It doesn't go away like some scandals do. It's
just a dark cloud.
Right. It's not things that, you know, it happens. You're going to get your punishment and it's done. You don't really have to worry about it anymore. When it's an ongoing investigation, when you're not. You know, most people are convinced that it's going to keep. It's just going to get. It might get bigger before it gets smaller, and eventually completely goes away. But yeah, I completely agree with you. And those, you know, Louisville, you know, doesn't really have a signature win. Arizona with their struggles. I agree with you. My next takeaway actually has to do with Arizona, and my takeaway is that at least at this point. Arizona and Purdue's struggles at the Battle for Atlantis will not. They're not going to define them.
Yes.
Since Arizona and Purdue have had their struggles, had their 1-5 combined record, Purdue has wins over Northwestern, Maryland, and Louisville, and Arizona in their last two games have beaten a Texas A&M team who was 7th in the country at the time, and they might still be. Since the new AP poll hasn't come out yet. And also beat an Alabama team who is really talented, and you know they had a couple hiccups with late coming down the stretch last night in that game. Alabama did, but when your expectations are so high and you have that sort of losing streak that they did, I've been impressed to see how Arizona has bounced back, and I'm convinced that at the end of the season. While they might have lost a couple seed spots, they're not going. Neither of these teams are going to let those losing streaks define them to a point where you know they have double digit seeds or you know don't make the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I think that's very true. I was curious to see how Arizona was going to respond. Purdue, I just wasn't that worried about.
Right.
Simply because they got a win.
Right.
You just want to come away with one win in those tournaments.
Right.
And I didn't expect them to pull off all of the wins that they have since then. I mean, mm-hmm. They're absolutely rolling right now.
Right. Yeah. For sure.
But right, it's so early in the season. There is so much left that that early, and even for Florida. You know, this week that they just had, those aren't going to define you.
Right, right.
Because you have so much time to make it up.
Right, right.
Yeah, that's very true.
Right, yeah.
I don't want to play either of those teams come the NCAA tournament.
Right,
I know that.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm a one seed, they get stuck with one of them as like a four.
Right.
Because of those two losses, I'm not going to be happy.
Yeah, I'm not pumped about that for sure. Yeah, no. Having lots of games to play, you either take that as the opportunity to bounce back or
right.
you sort of, let that losing streak haunt you, and then all of a sudden you're compounded that three-game losing streak into losing six of your six of nine, you know, 8 of 11, whatever it might be. But to both Sean Miller and Matt Painter's credit. They've whipped their teams into shape, and they've got some good wins, and they seem to be playing good basketball since then.
And you look at Purdue, you know,
troubles in paradise.
Purdue's top 15 in the country in both RPI and KenPom.
Yep.
Because their schedule has been so good, and they have so many good wins.
Right.
And that, well, that tournament didn't go well for them. It added to that strength of schedule.
Right.
So they're, both teams are going to be fine.
Yeah, for sure.
That was just a weird thing.
Yeah. And I think you and I thought, had pretty similar viewpoints on that.
Yeah.
Not that, you know, didn't think that these teams were really that bad. They just had bad weeks. But yeah, that's my next takeaway from this lovely college basketball season thus far.
My final one is that Duke's early and surprising loss to Boston College will be the best thing that happens to them all season. I think that there was a sense within this team, and Wendell Carter kind of said it,
mm-hmm.
that they thought they were kind of invincible.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
they're not.
Right.
I sat here ripping them to shreds after the PK. Well, not to shreds, but I was really concerned about them after the PK-80. Give them credit for finding ways to win.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that if they would have kept pulling these wins out, there would have been this thought that we're always going to find a way.
Right.
And now it's, look, you're not always going to find a way.
Right.
If you want to win these games in the ACC, you've got to be better.
Right. And credit to Grayson Allen. I saw an interview with him after after one of their wins a week ago, and he said, you know, we love that we've got this ability to clutch up late, and, you know, these freshmen that are able to, you know, stay calm when the pressure's high, but we got to find ways to play better basketball early, because we can't.
Yep.
We're not going to keep doing this. And if there's one person that has to realize that, it's Grayson Allen, being the senior on
yep.
the team and being able to recognize that and to sort of look deeper than just the fact that it's another notch in the win column. I agree with you. I think that'd be a good thing for them eventually going down the road.
Because I don't think it's a situation where they're not willing to learn and not willing to improve.
Right.
I uh-huh. think that they just, you know, part of it's the media hype that they've gotten and just kind of all the factors that go into it. They just, it's different when you actually experience that upset loss for the first
right.
time.
Yeah.
I think it's going to teach them a valuable lesson.
Right.
It's going to put a fire underneath them that you just can't have unless you lose.
Right. You know, that's a great, because when was the last time, I mean, Trayvon Duvall and Marvin Bagley and, you know, any of those you know, five-star talents, they've never lost basketball games. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
you know, they just don't know. I mean, Marvin Bagley is so good that Coach K wanted him after he decided to forego his senior year of high school. Like, if that was me, there'd be no doubt in my mind that I was just the best ever. Like,
right.
For the, you know, arguably the greatest coach ever to want me, and I'm really just supposed to be sitting in biology class on a Tuesday morning. I mean, that you know, while that's good for confidence, at some point you got to realize that, you know, while you were the best player you never played anybody better than you in high school. You're going to play players that are just as talented as you in college, and, you know, even Boston College teams that aren't, you know, considered by anyone to be a top team in the country.
They're coming
for
you.
They still are coming for you. They still have the talent, because everybody on that team was also the best
right.
team on their high school, the best player on their high school team.
You can't take anybody
right.
for granted in college basketball. I think that's
right.
something we've learned this year, too.
Right. Yep.
There have been a lot of upsets and just kind of inexplicable ones.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And, yeah, I think that Duke is going to come away much better from
mm-hmm.
that, though.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. My final takeaway is kind of a two-part takeaway. One, the takeaway at its core is that Villanova is going to be the number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament.
Mm.
And here's why. Because they're not going to lose a game that they're not supposed to lose, knock on wood, in non-conference. And you know, Xavier's good, but they're still going to win the Big East. And that's why they're going to win the Big East, because, you know, unless they lose at home to, you know, Georgetown and DePaul, and, you know, so, you know, the bottom three or four teams of the Big East, any loss on the road in conference play is not a bad loss. And thus far, they don't have, they're historically like the best team in the first, you know, 15 games of the season. I read some stats, some stupid stat somewhere that they've won their first, like before December 1st over the last 4 years, they haven't lost a game or something stupid like that. They've sort of flown under the radar again this year. They did it last year after their national championship. And, you know, they won 14 games in a row to start the season. And this year there's just so many storylines with, you know, Marvin Bagley and how good Duke is. And they just sort of fell into the background again. You know, they lost some of their seniors. You know, Chris Jenkins and Josh Hart. Josh Hart. I was blanking. And I was guilty of this. I had this thought of, will Villanova be, you know, as good as they have been recently with losing those guys? So I think they sort of float under the radar, but they haven't lost any games. They're not supposed to, clearly, because they're still undefeated. I think there's a really, really good chance that they get into Big East Conference play undefeated, and they'll take care of business there. I wouldn't be surprised to see them go, you know, 14-4 in conference, 13-5, maybe even better than that. But I think that, but you know, because so many teams have losses that they shouldn't have gotten this year, and the fact that the Big East is once again a really good conference top to bottom again this year, that they'll end up being the number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament.
The only thing I would say to that is that if Michigan State ends with a better conference record than that, Michigan State will be the number one overall
seed. I completely forgot. And I even, preparing for this podcast, I even had that thought and forgot about it. That's the only...
But you never know.
Right.
They're definitely going to be a one.
Right.
And everything you said is true.
And I even thought about that. You're completely right. Michigan State, they also don't have any bad losses. And that Big Ten conference probably isn't quite as good as the Big East this year.
Especially top to bottom.
Top to bottom. So I concede that. But my point being that Nova has no bad losses in a year where lots of top teams are being, you know, questioned and defined so thus far in non-conference for losing games that they probably should have won.
That was almost going to be my winner this week until Arizona won today. Mm-hmm. Was just the teams that did Arizona what they were State. Supposed to. Mm-hmm. Sorry, yeah, Arizona State. Okay. Mm-hmm. Just because everybody's losing.
Right.
And so Villanova and Michigan State are just doing their jobs.
Right.
They're also a deeper team this year.
Right.
Which mm-hmm. is how Jay Wright wants it. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't the case last year. And I think that really, really hurt them come tournament time. Yep. They had way too many guys playing way too many minutes because of ineligibility of Omari Spellman and injury to Phil Booth and just all this stuff. They've got a deeper, more complete team.
Right. You're right.
Maybe not as talented, but that's very true. And they're one of those teams. They don't beat themselves.
Right.
They're smart. They're well coached, and they're talented.
Right.
They got a really nice combination of all those things.
Right. And maybe the best point guard in the country.
Also very true. The best duo of players as well with Mikal Bridges and obviously Jalen Brunson.
Right.
Speaking of Villanova, it's time for the Dante DiVincenzo report.
Oh boy,
Dante had a fantastic day.
Did he really?
Against LaSalle.
Tell me all about it.
Dante played 39 minutes. First of all,
okay,
most on the team.
Did he start?
No, he came off the bench and played 39 minutes.
Okay.
He tied for the team lead with 18 points.
Okay.
Tying Phil Booth.
Good.
He had a double-double.
Okay.
He had 10 rebounds.
Okay.
In addition, he also had 3 assists and 4 steals and hit a 3 to put him up 5 with about 3 minutes left in the game that they were losing at halftime to LaSalle, which just shouldn't happen.
Right.
But Dante helped them find a way to win like Villanova does. Shout out to Dante.
Okay. I'm just going to keep my mouth shut this time.
Are you ready to concede yet?
No, I'm not. That is Dante DiVincenzo report number 2. I'm going to hold off a little longer. Way to go, Dante, for showing up against this 5-6 LaSalle Explorers.
I appreciate it.
If he continues his intelligent play, I would remind you that he had 3 turnovers today and 3 assists. But I almost made a joke that his double double was points and turnovers.
Not even close.
Turnovers.
That is not fair.
But hey, good job, Dante. He did have 4 steals.
Yep.
I'll concede again to Dante DiVincenzo.
Round 2 goes to Dante.
I'll really start leaning if he continues his stellar play in Big East Conference. But hey, if you can't do it against LaSalle, then you can't do it against anybody else. So I will concede. But more importantly, the Villanova Wildcats are 10-0. They're fourth in the country as of right now.
Going to be second.
They'll probably be second in the country. Yeah. And hopefully they'll break this curse of the number two team losing games they shouldn't lose. They're playing Temple.
Yep. That's always a tough one.
Temple and Hofstra. Temple is on the road at Temple, so...
I don't expect
them to lose that game, but hey. And then Hofstra they should take care of before starting conference play at DePaul. But that'll just about do it for this edition of the Jays for Days podcast. Hey, so it's a good week for all Philly sports, right?
Yeah, Carson Wentz might have just torn his ACL, though, so that's not good, though.
Sorry for our quick digression to the Philadelphia Eagles. But that's all we have for the Jays for Days podcast this week. Make sure you subscribe to it on iTunes so that you never miss an upload.
Get better, Carson.
Get better, Carson Wentz. That's never something you want to see. But yeah, subscribe to us on iTunes. We hope you enjoyed this one. I'm Josh. He's Josh. We'll see you later.